Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
The countdown very much on now to the Welsh game on Saturday. There is much to discuss midway through this prep week for the Irish side. We have Keith Wood with us. You there, Keith?
I am indeed. How are you, Joe? How are you doing?
Great to have you with us. And Matt Williams, you're there as well?
I am, Joe. How are you, Keith?
I'm excellent, Matt. Good to hear your dulcet Aussie tones.
What a charmer. So I'm sure people know the team at this stage. Jordan Larmour, Andrew Conway, Robbie Henshaw comes into the starting 15. Bundy Aki keeps his place. Jacob Stockdale does similarly. And then we have Johnny Sexton and Connor Murray. We have a front row of Keane Healy, Rob Herring, Tig Furlong. It is James Ryan and Ian Henderson once again. And then we have Peter O'Mahony, Josh van der Fleer and CJ Stander. The Welsh are coming to town, Keith. What did you make of Saturday gone?
I enjoyed it after a fashion. I would have liked to be a little bit more clinical. And I do you know what? For some reason, I didn't feel panicky watching it. I felt we were going to win it throughout. I felt we tried things. We could have tried more. But one of the elements from this, and it comes across as a truly dreadful cliche, is you have to build up a level of momentum and you want to get the win first thing first. Wales had an easy game against an incredibly lackluster Italy and were able to wipe the floor with them. And we weren't given that opportunity as much. I was a little bit disappointed in our level of aggression because I really think we need to get that level up an awful lot higher. I think we suffered for it last year. I'd like to have been very, very happy, but we got a few injuries and I didn't get to see some of the guys that were gunning for a spot. So, look, overall, I was happy enough. I watched it from home. We had a load of people in and around, a load of kids kind of watching it. They were excited by it as an idea. So I think we have to be careful sometimes not to get too cynical. I'd like to have seen more, but I'm happy we're off. We're up and running. And I think that's the first game under the belt. Wales have had a couple of games because they played the Barbas beforehand. They can sort out a few things with a new coach. We'll see more, I hope, this weekend. And I also think this weekend is much more of a challenge for us. And that's a good thing for Irish rugby.
It's interesting you picked up on the aggression point because in advance of the game, Keith, Andy Farrell, when he was asked even generally, just a general question, what can we expect from this Irish team? He talked about aggression, physicality, referenced the 07 game at Croke Park, you know, the hallmarks of Irish rugby in his view. And so I fully expected, well, if nothing else, especially against Scotland, who are not genetically superior to us, unlike other teams, that Ireland would be the aggressors here. Now, to what extent you can take a coach's public pre-match comments at face value, I don't know. But it was very notable that despite, you know, all the build-up from Farrell in that regard, and actually Scotland looked a bit more damaged and up for it after the World Cup.
I think there's a bit of that too, but also it takes a bit of time. So to be fully aggressive, you're looking for everybody knowing exactly what you're doing at any period of time. I know that sounds kind of simplistic, but if I go up at a million miles an hour and you take your time, that doubt is incredibly destructive to us. We always got knocked off our kilter very quickly. It just shows you what happens. Now, we're not absolutely buoyant with confidence either. You know, we got a bit of a hard time in the World Cup and it's been fairly negative since. So our confidence isn't fully up there yet. That takes a little bit of time to do it. But also, actually, I thought when Keelan Doris got the bang in the head, that takes a lot out of you. This is a young kid who's starting and it's funny. I've been watching a thing on Amazon for the last couple of weeks with my boys on American football. These guys get paid lorry loads of money. You know, it's a huge thing, but they're all incredibly human in it. We kind of forget that at times. So, look, I'm not giving any excuses whatsoever. I still have, if we forget the level of aggression for a minute, what I always wish for when I look at an Irish team is that they have an incredibly hard push defence because it's where we're at our most comfortable and I think at our most confident.
Matt, a point you have been making on Twitter and you've been quoting your colleague Brett Ego, that's how I pronounce it, isn't it?
Brett Ego.
Igo, excuse me, who's been a coach down the years and around the game for a long time. And so he's been looking at the end-on-end view of things. And, you know, we often hear about attacking shape, and Pat Lam famously had this 2-4-2 shape, and Brett has looked at Ireland and it seems like the look of the 1-3-3-2 shape. Now, without pictures, we can't get into too much depth here, clearly. But the question is, one, do you like the look of that shape? Do you like, in theory, what that shape is trying to do? And how does it fit in with the players we have at our disposal?
It fits in very well. I do like the look of the shape. And Ireland tried it a number of times. I think there's a difficulty with this, that around the world everyone's copying each other without really thinking about it. These shapes came out of New Zealand, but the New Zealanders, and to the Australians to a lesser degree, play two out halves in their team. That's why they moved Budden Barrett to fullback and put Richie Munger to, you put him into the team as a starting 10, because you need really good passes to shift that ball fast enough and accurately enough against a rushing defence. When Australia beat New Zealand in the only highlight of the Australian season last year, it was a good highlight, but it was the only one. They played two. They brought Curtly Boyle and played him at 15. And this ability and the quality of the passing allows you to get around the defence. Now, I just don't think, I like Bundiak. I'm a big fan of him. I don't think we use him the right way, but I also don't think he's a great second 5-8, as the New Zealand would say, not like a fine skilled player. I think he's a really good footballer. I'm not questioning him in any way, but that's not his game. And I think at times they struggled in that shape because of that. They did. There was one occasion where Gary Ringrose did make some very good ground in the first half on the far side of the field, on the right-hand side of the field as Ireland were running. But there were a lot of other times where the Scottish defence was getting up and belting us midfield, and we couldn't get that ball into the channel. So, look, I think it's a bit like Keith just suggested. I'm prepared to give him a bit of time, but I also think that this is a big problem in coaching across the world, where we're putting in systems without looking at the athletes we have. And, you know, do the athletes have to increase their level of skill? Of course they do. But I don't think they'll get that time this week against Wales as well. Wales have a very, very well-organised D from the time when Warren Gatland's time, the hangover there from Sean Edwards. It was very solid the other day. Now, we know it was only Italy and they didn't test them, but they've still got some things to do. The things I didn't like, mate, we didn't see a counter-attack. Jordan Lama ran back, but I thought our wingers were lazy and they didn't get back and support him so we could combine in. There was a fair few things there, but, is there time? Yes, there is, but it'll have to be quick because this is a very good world side. And, they're coming here with no fears. They're going to have to really up their game right across all aspects of their performance.
And just to pick up on a point you make there, so we have that picture, say the ball going to Larmer and the two Irish wings are high up in the defensive line. You kind of want them to double back and come around and get in touch with Larmer when he has the ball, is it?
Yeah, Alan Gaffney, when we used to run counter-attack drills, he would just say, listen, guys, it's just hard work. It's just effort. Realignment is just you've got to bust your backside. You've got to sprint back. You can't just jog back. You've got to sprint back. So we saw Lama run the ball back a number of times. And that's not counter-attack. That's running the ball back. You know, where's the support around him to pass to? And you have to blame the centres as well. The centres have got the wide centre has to push back in the old systems to create that, which you see in New Zealand. Mm. So in New Zealand, when you see the ball go to a fullback or just into touch when they do a quick throw-in, you'll see four guys across the field. And before you can count to five, that ball has been transferred to the far side of the field, away from the chasing defence. Now, it doesn't matter who you've got at fullback, unless you've got Superman there in a cape and he can fly over the top of them. If you've only got one guy in the back and he catches the ball and runs up, the chances of him getting through are slim at the elite levels of international rugby. So we need to sort of put some more structures around Lama. And I think Lama's a fabulously exciting young man. He's playing really good rugby at the moment. But and what that also creates is slow ball. If you've just got one guy running back, slow ball, and Connor Murray box kicking, God save me, I'm so sick of it. It's boring, it's laborious, and it's not just Connor, I know it's in other teams, but if you don't get fast ball, what do? They box kick it. We've got to find a way to get faster ball. And if you just run back into defenders, you've got three defenders on you, that's going to be slow ball. So all those things are related in the system. Mm. But I have to say, I was really... And I didn't think Connor kicked well at all. And it was exceptionally slow. I'm aware what Keith's saying. We can get a bit... The grumpy old men can get a bit grumpy, but it is getting very tedious right across the game, the box kicking.
Well, if I jump on that a little bit, and I would agree with a lot of that, and in fairness to Alan Gaffney, who was and still is one of the most cynical men I've ever met in my life. He's a truly... And he's right up my street. He's magnificent, right? Really good. But... Like we, and again, this is kind of like old school stuff, but we were taught that if you catch the ball at the back, and for some strange reason, I often caught the ball at the back, you look to pass. Because once you pass it once, you are then able to look up and see and support. Whereas if you run back straight, you're trying to gauge everything in real time yourself. You're in control of the ball as well. So there's normally one or two passes, and then you have a shape, and then you can attack. And the reason why I'd like Larmer to do that is because I think he's fast, but where he's ludicrously dangerous is on a step. And if he can pick a line off somebody, I just think he can be incredibly destructive all the time. And look, I go back. The box kicks are losing their effectiveness. You're criticizing some of the kicks. A couple of them weren't great, but most of them are actually okay. But in the last year, it has now become absolutely part and parcel of a referee's interpretation that guys who are running interference, unless they knock a guy out of the way, is absolutely fine. 12 months ago, you had a straight run to go for to compete in the air with somebody, with nobody in your way. If they were in your way, it was considered a penalty. Though it's not considered a penalty anymore. And I think it's actually better for the game because we're not having as many... big collisions in the air with two people going for the ball. So it's almost an ignoring of a law of the game has made it a little bit safer, but it's also kind of taken away the benefit of box kicking with a view of getting it back.
The next point I want to bring up is arguably less of a question and more just interesting information, but I want to put it to you both anyway and see if you have any points to make on it, because we are still in the early stages of the Farrell era. And people are curious about the methodology. How are they going about their business? You know, so they're at the National Sports Campus in Abbottstown. So instead of, as Rory O'Connor wrote today in the Irish Independent, they're not in that stuffy, darkened room in Carton House. This is the Monday morning review I'm talking about. So what they're able to do now, which in fairness does sound pretty dynamic and interesting, is they have an indoor pitch, an indoor facility at the National Campus at Abbottstown. So they have a video room right next to it. They sit in the video room, they go through bits and pieces, and then they're able to go straight out onto the indoor pitch, rectify the mistake or what they've identified, go back in again, another piece of footage, rinse, wash and repeat, which sounds, you know, kind of an interesting thing. And what Farrell said was it was about empowering players. We're trying to make it inclusive, get proper feedback, get them talking. They're the guys who are out in the field. We're up in the stands. It was a great morning on Monday. Our guys are rugby players. They don't want to be sat in a classroom the whole time. Now, I don't think that was meant as a biting critique of Joe Schmidt, but certainly, you know, you would associate Joe with the classroom on the Monday morning. What did seem like more of a critique of Schmidt came, Keith, from Ian Henderson. He said, there is a different mentality around the place. There's a different mentality in meetings. There's a different relationship between players and coaches. He said, everything that's done is done in a positive manner. Maybe in years gone by, guys might be a wee bit tentative of who they ask questions to or who they were trying to get clarity from for fear of people thinking they don't know their detail, they don't know their stuff. But now there's a very open learning system. And I would say that's been put in place to ensure guys are free to get information whenever they want. So there are two kind of interesting things coming out from the camp. I mean, as ever, the proof will be in the pudding. You know, Joe Schmidt did very well his way, but we're getting an insight into how they're doing things.
Well, I also think these guys are becoming more mature. And it's funny, we tried to touch on this a few weeks ago. Maybe we didn't delve into it as quickly or as much as we should have. When you have a coach, you do what the coach says. The coach is the boss. Now, if it works, that's fantastic. All you want to do is win. Right. So if you're winning, you're not really arguing through an awful lot of the detail. But without a shadow of a doubt, a lot of pressure came on over the last 12 months, from Ireland reaching the top, the zenith of the game, to beating New Zealand again, to doing incredibly well, winning a Grand Slam, to then getting bullied for maybe four or five matches in the last year, to a huge amount of time together that seemed to be fatiguing, not energizing. Guys are going to look for a change, but also you've guys that have been told what to do for a long period of time. These are strong, intelligent, capable guys. They will often want to have an input as well. And in many respects, I think it's just a change in coach and a change in coaching style. And we've all had it at different times. So I said it, I think it was last week, I had conversations with you know, some of the greats that we've had in the last few years, and they're saying, what are we going to do after Joe's gone? But there's always another coach, and the other coach isn't going to do it in the same way, because that's almost too tiring. So they're going to do it in a different way. So Andy Farrell is, I think we're lucky to have Andy Farrell, because Andy Farrell is a very particular beast. This guy is an accomplished sportsman, an incredibly driven man. But a guy with a bit of a wicked sense of humor, and also a guy who understands that really you have to enjoy it. It can't be about pressure every minute of every day. And I'd love to have had the opportunity to play under Joe Schmidt, but I might have only loved to have done it for a couple of years, you know. And maybe it's the case because I don't want to be under pressure every minute of every day.
Yeah.
And in fact, what I used to try and do when big pressure matches came on, I would become more silly as the week went on and the times where I could. I was very serious on the training field, dangerously serious at times, and fully focused at that period of time, and hopefully fully focused on the match on the Saturday. But I was forever trying to relax more often. And I had got towards the end of my career, when things had become far more serious, there's too many bloody meetings for me, you know. So, you know, it takes all types. And we used to say there were independent views all the time when we started, because the game was amateur. And then it became all rugby views and rugby players' views. Now you're getting a different perspective from a sportsman who's been involved in professional sport for longer than anybody, pretty much. And because he was playing rugby league before rugby union was professional. So we're getting a different perspective to it. I don't know. Everything that's going to be said at the moment is a criticism on Joe Schmidt. Joe Schmidt deserves some criticism because we didn't do as well as we'd all hoped that we were going to do. I'd still say, let not that sully what happened before 2019.
Yeah. So, Matt, I don't know what you can take from a 42 points to nil win over Italy. Certainly Ireland laboured in Rome last year, so it's not like it's a foregone conclusion that you'll beat them by 42 points to nil. But what kind of shape do Wales come here in, do you think, and how's this game going to go on Saturday?
Well, you've got to give any team at international level fair credit when they score 42 points. And the Italians were surprisingly poor. They seem to have gone backwards, which is pretty hard to say because they're in a very low place before the tournament. The defence from the line out, so in other words, a set-piece defence, which should be the best place to defend because you've got time, you can look at what they're doing, you get organised. The Italians' set-piece defence from outside centre out was absolutely remarkably poor. I was quite shocked when I was watching it, because I was with you, Joe, and we're in the TV. I asked to watch a replay. I said, "Who's he taking?" So the Italian winger literally stood in the only spot where there was no one, and they just ran straight through. So now, to be fair to the Welsh, their passing seems to have improved. It was high quality passing. It was rapid. It was flat, and it was very well directed, and it got the ball to the extremities really, really quickly. And I can see a change from the old style that Warren Gatland used to play, but it's still got the same discipline. Now, where Wales are in all of that, we don't really know, because the Italians were just that poor. So I do think that they'll come to the Aviva with very little fear. They'll come with a lot of confidence. And if Ireland defend the way they did, just as Keith was pointing out, Ireland are at their best when that D comes off the line and they're aggressive and they're fast and they're in your face. And that's when Ireland are a really difficult team to break down. But I didn't think they were that difficult to break down the other day. I thought we were very slow off the line and the Scots were having a lot of joy because they played a lot more direct than they usually do. We usually expect them just to go side to side to side. But they did play direct and it did cause us troubles. So, you know, I think if Wales play to their potential, if Ireland don't have a significant improvement in their performance, that they could be in real trouble, you know. I agree with what Keith said. That is the beauty of the Six Nations. There's so much we don't know about most of the teams. Mm. The unknown is more than the known. Probably even more with England now. We thought we knew a fair bit about them after their performance. But we just don't know enough about Ireland or about Wales. And we expect both teams to improve. Mm. Having said all that, playing at home, that's a big, big plus. You know, Ireland only lost once in 5 years. So that's being at the Aviva is a huge bonus for the national team.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a compelling view in one way or another. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. And I am also delighted to announce Rishtard Cooper is going to be back in the fold for the Six Nations for another blast of Rishtard's Rugger Thing. The first episode goes live tomorrow. And we've heard rumours that Will Greenwood and Scott Quinnell will be making appearances. And Matt and Keith, I will alert you when you're featuring, don't worry.
Yep. So, very happy to be out of that one.
So, France, England. Goodness me, Keith. I think we were all kind of hoping last week, weren't we, that we'd get this kind of France for the tournament, for everything. And geez, that first 40 was fun.
I'm hoping that for 15 years. And I loved it because it was a joy to watch. And look, it's a joy on many levels because it's no harm for England to lose and no harm for England to lose after the bullshitty comments of Eddie Jones talking.
Do you think they were a factor?
I always think that things like that are a factor because they're a factor for the opposition who stick it up on the wall. And look, people say they don't need it. Well, don't say it so because you have it. But also it's a... the level of brutality that he was talking about, like what sort of pressure is that on his players? He wants to have great players, you know, and he started talking about it when the player that he relies upon wasn't playing, Vinnie Vunipola. Mm. And England are a very different team without Vunipola in the side. I thought his selection was poor, picking Curry at eight, and I thought he got schooled in the match. I just thought some of the athleticism of the French players were phenomenal. I think Dupont's a pleasure to watch to play. He's just able to orchestrate whatever it is that he wants to do. I thought it brought back a level of small rugby players, and I think that is fantastic. A lot of the backs are not big men. What surprised me on the weekend, two things that surprised me, was the speed and acceleration of Tompkins for Wales, and some of the speed that went around the French back row forwards and that athleticism. I thought it was phenomenal. And it was, I have to equally say, Johnny May scoring two unbelievably magic tries was and you can't rely on that all the time. He plucked both of those out of pretty much nowhere. Otherwise, England would have been absolutely roundly beaten out the gate. And it was an amazing to see that style of rugby back in again. And we don't know how long it'll last. I want it to last as long as possible. And I still want us to try and beat them at the end of it. But I think rugby is better for having a style and a play and something like that in. And Sean Edwards, you know, wherever he has been, he's another rugby league guy, but at everything he's ever done, he has held silverware at the end of it. He is a guy that is, and I mentioned to you before, I met him at a coffee shop in the Scrummery in Twickenham about 15 years ago, and I was still playing, and he grilled me for an hour. He said, listen, any chance I could talk to you? I want to talk to you. What do you think about defense? And he grilled me solidly for an hour. I swear to God, I've never been, it was like an interview, but it was like an interrogation. I met him the following day and he blanked me totally. He got what he wanted the day before. You know, that's, and he is obsessed. I didn't think anything less of him. He wanted the information. He didn't need to talk to me the following day. That was in the past for him. He's obsessed with thinking of anything that's slightly different, of trying to get it. apparently he has got to the level of French that he needs to not have any interpreter anywhere near him. Now, he never speaks an awful lot in English, but he doesn't speak an awful lot in French. But what he says is direct and to the point, and he has given them a sense of security that they haven't had for a period of time.
Well, that's very impressive, because even Raj was in here on Monday, and even, you know, he would say that a noun out of place or the word used even subtly in the wrong way can change the meaning in a big way. Now, maybe his struggles with the language are, but I think he's doing all right with it. So that's very impressive on Edwards' part. And just on Galtier, while you're doing this for anyone who's watching as opposed to just listening on the radio, I'm throwing up the famous image of your last game in 03, because it was Galtier who came over and gave you a big hug, wasn't it? You know him.
Well, it was. I do. I know him very well. Yeah. And he's a quality guy. He also surrounded himself with other quality guys. Ibanez, who was French captain. So you've had two very successful French captains that are very different guys, actually, working together on it. I mentioned again before, but I think it was the biggest contract I was offered was 2 years after I had retired, and what he'd wanted. So this is in 2005, I think 2006. What he wanted was a captain to finish the matches. I still haven't yet to see that really happen. He wanted a player to sit in the bench who was an international captain to play for 20 minutes to think clearly at the end of the game.
How much money?
It was me, I don't know. A lot of money. we don't mention money, Joe.
You said it was a massive contract.
It was a massive contract. And but it was to do it for 6 months. So right. For 20 minutes, for 6 months. Because he said, we kind of lose our way at the end of games.
Where
so
was he? Like where was he at that stage, clear. Pete? Sorry?
Stade Francais.
Okay.
And so he's been coaching since then, right? So he retired the week after me. And that was the comment when we were hugging. It was either him or I on that day. Whoever lost that game retired. So he lasted a week longer than me. But he is. He's a smart guy. He is clued into it. Politics, rugby and politics are totally intertwined in France. They had a big vote that they never wanted to have a non-French coach for the French rugby team. That was a big thing among all the clubs in the last while. But they still manoeuvred to get a Wigan boy in to help with the defence. So they've manoeuvred whatever they've had to do. And look, I think it augurs well for the game because they play differently. That's the point for me. We don't want the same all the time. We want little bits of different.
It was a shrewd move getting Edwards in. It already looks that way. Matt, you're obviously in France at the moment. Are they cock-a-hoop with all this?
The Midi-Olympic, which is the rugby newspaper that comes out twice a week, right across France, has 5 pages on the game, and they're loving it. They're loving that on a whole lot of fronts. The fact it is a young French side that they're playing with great expression and courage and effort, and they, you know, despite all this, you know, the talk about French attack, they're loving the D. They're loving the physical commitment, the courage, how they put their bodies on the line, and they kept a great team out, you know. And as Keith said, it took two pieces of staggering individual brilliance from Johnny May to break the line. So, yeah, they're really happy. I mean, no, we've got to keep it in context. The last 20 minutes, the scrum and the line out more than creaked. They were in a bit of trouble there, but to get a win like that against England is just massive. I think it's a year too early for this French side. I think we'll see a lot of improvement in this French side over the next 12 months. And next year's Six Nations, I think they could be a real handful.
Matt,
it was great to watch. Yeah. Really great to watch.
Can I ask you, so on England, Jones is certainly accused of being an odd selector at times. Keith mentioned the back row, for instance. So there's that. But if we think back to 2018, when things were going very well for Irish rugby and Jones and England were at a real low ebb, that was the period where they didn't have Tuilagi and they didn't have Billy Vunipola, and I think they lost Mako Vunipola for a good chunk of that Six Nations as well. I'm going to correct that point. But I think effectively the two Vunipolas were gone and Tuilagi was gone as well. So with England, I mean, are they actually just a bit one-dimensional? You know what I mean? You take away that heft that transforms any side. What's actually left with England for all these really highly ranked players and this brilliant World Cup behind them, Matt?
Joe, it's a very good question. I would delve firstly into the psychology of English sport. And Keith played at Harlequins for many years, and we've had a couple of chats about the English psychology coming to Ireland. But I just see it time and time and time again right across English sport that when they get some success, they talk themselves up like you wouldn't believe. Like what Eddie said last week was appalling. And I got great respect. I mean, I joke about Eddie because I've been a competitor against him for many years. But, I have great respect. He's made two World Cup finals. You know, he's won Super Rugby. Like the guys don't do that if you're a mug. He survived 25 years. He's phenomenal. But what he said last week was absolutely outrageous. But the English media didn't come out and say, oh, it's outrageous. The players didn't say, that's outrageous. They lapped it up. But that's when English teams fail. They talk it up publicly. You can talk it up inside your change room when no one's listening. Say, listen, boys, we want to win this World Cup. We're going out to win it. But once you get out and you start pumping your own tyres up in public, the opposition get cross. And all it does is empower your opponents. And that's exactly what they did. And then things went wrong. It put pressure on the players. I've never seen Owen Farrell drop a ball twice in a game. And that's what happened. I thought his selections were wrong. Now, he got his selection wrong. We talked about this, Joe, for the final of the World Cup. And we spoke about this. The guy called Ben Darwin, who's a former Wallaby tight head prop, didn't play a lot, but played a number of games for Australia, said that Eddie Jones, you know, by putting Courtney Laws at tight head second row, really depowered that side of the English scrum in the final. And we remember Coles getting popped up in the air after the injury to Kyle Sinclair there early in the final. Now, Ben Darwin said that he did it in 2005 at Twickenham when he was coaching Australia, because he was in that game and he was on the bench, I believe, and the tight head prop at the time, Al Baxter, copped all this criticism. But it was the actual, they put a loose head second row over behind the tight head who couldn't scrummage on that side. So, look, none of us are perfect in this. Selections, sure. When you get it right, you're a hero, and when you don't, you're a mug. But England, when they start bragging, start doing this, it affects them. Now, they've got to go back to do what they do well. They can't put Curry, who, you know, it depowered Curry by putting him at 80. He had a phenomenal World Cup. So you take a guy out of the position where he was almost the best in the world during that World Cup, and you put him in a different position. Why do that? So it is bad selecting, but it's also bad team culture. You just feel you're not respecting your opponent enough. Now, I think this might be interesting to see what the selection is this week and whether they get themselves grounded when they're going up to Murrayfield, because 2 years ago, they did the same thing. Eddie started bragging, I'm only going to put one guy on the ruck. I've seen the modern way and running. First guy to come in, pushed him out of the way and stole about six rucks. Yeah. Game over.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got form in this area.
Okay. Fellas, we're out of time. Looking forward to the weekend. Thanks so much. Keith Wood, Matt Williams. Thanks, guys.
Brilliant. Pleasure, Jack. Pleasure, Keith.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.